Lovecraft's Pillow by Mark Steensland and Rick Howdela. The hair on Martin Hale's neck prickled when he heard the basement door open. Glancing up the cellar steps, he waited for Alice, his wife, to appear in the darkness at the top of the stairs. He could almost imagine the air was tinged with a hint of sulphurous fumes. After a moment's hesitation, she started down, each step creaking beneath her weight. And with every step, the tension in Martin's shoulders coiled tighter. His hands, poised over the keyboard, began to shake as his wife stepped into the light and approached his tiny work area in the corner of the basement, next to the furnace. "How's your story coming along?" she asked, but her tone of voice was so flat, Martin got the clear impression she could just about care how anything was coming along. "Slowly," Martin said, clenching his hands into fists above the keyboard of his laptop to keep them from shaking. "Well," Alice said, "the mail came." Martin caught the curling sneer on her upper lip. "Did I hear back from..." Before he could finish, his wife dropped an envelope onto the keyboard. The sound of the impact made him jump, and the edge of the envelope hit the K and L keys, so both letters suddenly appeared on the screen in the middle of the paragraph he'd been working on. "The electric company?" she said. She plunked another envelope down on top of the first. "Or the gas company?" A third envelope landed on top of the pile. "Or the credit card company? Who were you waiting to hear from, Martin?" Martin stared up at her, unable to speak. After a momentary hesitation, she dropped one last envelope onto the keyboard. "Oh, or were you looking for this?" She paused, and for an instant, Martin was filled with hope before she added, "It's from the IRS." Martin's shoulders sagged as he stared at the pile of bad news. A cold sensation tightened around his chest, and his throat felt unbelievably dry. He took a shallow breath, but the musty air in the basement where he did his writing almost choked him. "Nothing from Cemetery Dance magazine?" Alice no longer even tried to keep the disdain off her face or out of her voice as she held up an envelope with the Cemetery Dance logo for a return address. Before handing it to him, she held it up to the desk light and shook it from side to side. Through the thin paper, she could see a single sheet of paper. "But it doesn't look like there's a check in there." Martin reached across the desk and grabbed the envelope from her. His pulse was racing hard in his neck as he tore the envelope open and took out the letter. After a quick glance, his eyes came to rest on the last sentence above the editor's signature. "We wish you luck placing your story elsewhere." Next to that, scrawled in black ink, was a scribbled message. "You came really close this time, Mr. Hale. Please keep trying." Swallowing his disappointment, Martin folded the letter, slipped it back into the envelope, and dropped it onto the desk. He didn't even have the heart to put it in the bottom drawer of his desk, where it would molder away with the rest of his rejection letters and rejected stories. "I knew it." Alice sounded almost sad as she leaned back and folded her arms across her chest. "You want to know what I think?" Shielding his eyes from the glare of the desk light, Martin looked up at her. He knew exactly what she was going to say before she said it, but he also knew she was going to say it anyway. "I think you've got to give it up, Martin. You've been trying to get published for more than 10 years now, but you know what? You ain't never going to get published. Ever." She hesitated, and for a split second, Martin thought she was going to say something encouraging. But then she added, "And I was a fool to think you ever would." Choking back his rage and frustration, Martin lowered his gaze and stared at the glowing screen of his laptop. "I just need some inspiration," he said, as much to himself as to her. "Some real inspiration." "No," Alice said, her high-pitched voice cracking like a whip across his face. "What you need to do is return that laptop we couldn't afford in the first place and go get a real job." "The store won't take it back," he said, his stomach churning with despair. "It's been over 90 days. Alice turned and started toward the stairs. "Then I guess you'll just have to pawn it." Staring at the glowing computer screen, Martin mumbled, "Well, if you didn't buy so many shoes..." "I heard that," Alice said, without bothering to turn and look at him, as she hesitated halfway up the stairs. He jumped when she reached the top of the stairs and slammed the door shut behind her. The next morning, with the laptop in its black carrying case slung over his shoulder, Martin walked downtown. It had rained earlier that morning, and everything was still damp. Steam rose from the sidewalk in the warming sun. The city streets, at least in this part of Providence, perfectly matched his mood. The piles of litter along the curbs, the boarded-up storefronts with soaped-over windows, the broken parking meters, the graffiti-covered walls, the stray cats and dogs roaming the alleys, the vacant lots choked with weeds, everything looked as destitute and desolate as Martin felt inside at the prospect of actually giving up his dream of becoming a published writer. The front and sides of the pawn shop were about the only thing with any color or life in this part of town. A local artist had painted a Caribbean beach scene with Rastafarians and sunbathers dancing under palm trees with the tropical ocean and sky. The artwork seemed so out of place in such a drab part of the city, it almost made Martin smile as he approached the storefront. Just as he was reaching for the doorknob, though, the display in the front window caught his eye, and he froze. What the? He leaned close to the window, unable to believe what he was looking at. It wasn't much. Just an average-sized blue-and-white striped pillow with a large brownish stain in the center. It was the sign in front of the pillow that riveted Martin's attention. Lovecraft's Pillow, $250. Martin's breath caught in his chest. He couldn't stop staring at the pillow and the sign. He was afraid it was magical and would disappear the instant he turned away or even blinked. Finally, feeling the weight of the laptop on his shoulder, he grabbed the doorknob and pulled the door open. The bells above the door jingled as he entered. "The Lovecraft?" he asked. The middle-aged man leaning on the counter with both elbows looked up from his casual perusal of a girly magazine. He had a toothpick in the corner of his mouth and kept shifting from one side to the other as he stared at Martin with a somewhat bewildered look. He seemed almost angry that a customer had dared to interrupt his day. "H.P. Lovecraft?" Martin said, barely able to contain his excitement. "The writer? That's really his pillow in the window?" He was standing close to the display, but was suddenly fearful he had imagined it, and it wouldn't be there when he looked again. He turned and glanced at the pillow to reassure himself. Amazingly, it was still there. It looked so mundane, but a rush of excitement was running through Martin like an electric current. Maybe he was the only one to recognize it, but if that pillow was what the sign said it was far from mundane. "It's what the guy who pawned it said," the pawn shop owner replied with an I-could-just-about-give-a-crap shrug. "May I?" Martin asked, his voice trembling with a note of hushed reverence as he indicated the pillow with a quick nod of the head. "Whatever," the pawn shop owner said as he sauntered over to the window display, picked up the pillow, and handed it to Martin. For a moment or two, Martin hesitated to take it from him. It might be sacrilegious or something even to touch it, but when the store owner appeared to be getting impatient with him, Martin accepted the pillow from him, letting it rest on his open palms. "Just think," he said, his voice low and hushed with awe. "H.P. Lovecraft actually placed his head on this pillow and slept." He inhaled and caught a faint, musty odor that reminded him of his office space in the basement. It made him dizzy. Think of the dreams it must contain. He shivered and glanced at the store owner, who appeared to be totally underwhelmed. The inspiration. "Yeah, whatever," the store owner said as he shifted the toothpick in his mouth from one side to the other. "What you got there?" His hands hooked like the claws of a bird of prey as he reached for the laptop case slung over Martin's shoulder. Barely aware of what he was doing, Martin let go of the pillow with one hand and dropped his shoulder so the store owner could take it. "Laptop, huh?" the store owner said, sounding vaguely interested. "Not sure how much something like this is worth. Don't get much demand for these in this neighborhood, you know?" Martin was barely paying attention as he gazed at the pillow in his hand. Even now, even just touching it sent a shiver racing through him, and he knew, without any doubt, that he had to own this pillow. "How about an even trade?" the store owner asked. Martin found himself nodding his agreement without consciously thinking about it. He had already convinced himself he didn't really need the laptop. It had been a luxury expense, and Alice was right. They really couldn't afford it. If he planned to keep writing, he would get his old desktop out of the attic and hook it up. There must be some place he could still buy floppy disks so he could back up his work. "Deal," Martin said, as he stuck out his hand and shook with the store owner. "Whatever." Moments later, Martin stepped out onto the sidewalk with the pillow tucked underneath his arm. Just like that, the world looked different to him. Maybe it was just knowing what he was holding that changed his outlook, but already he was feeling inspired. He inhaled deeply, smelling the damp, rich scent of the freshly washed city. As he walked down the street, he watched with mild amusement as sunlight glanced off the soaped-over windows and shined in brilliant beams that reflected rainbows from the puddles in the street. He watched a stray cat as it scrambled over a rusted chain-link fence and imagined the dark, dank places an animal like that would have to lurk in order to survive. He even smiled and nodded a greeting to the derelicts who asked him for any spare change. "Grist for the mill," Martin whispered to himself as he started up the street back to his house. "It's all grist for the mill." "Martin?" The sharp note in Alice's voice made Martin cringe, and he almost dropped the pillow. Lovecraft's pillow, which he had just slipped into his pillowcase. He and Alice used contrasting colors for their bedsheets and pillowcases. The bottom sheet and Alice's pillowcase were white. The top sheet and Martin's pillowcase were black. When they had first started doing this mix-and-match with their bed linens, Martin had been amused by the unorthodox aspect of it. But over the years, as he and Alice drifted further and further apart emotionally, he had come to see this custom as painfully symbolic of their relationship. Moving quickly, Martin replaced the pillow on his side of the bed, smoothed the bedspread over it, and turned around just as Alice appeared in the bedroom doorway. "I thought I heard you come in," she said. She placed her hands on her hips and all but glared at him. "So how much did you get for the laptop?" Martin swallowed with difficulty and, lowering his gaze, said, The pawn shop was closed." He almost choked on the lie. When he realized he was staring at the pillow on his side of the bed, he quickly shifted his gaze away from it, but he was positive Alice sensed he was up to something. The muscles in the back of his neck and shoulders tensed as he waited for the inevitable question, but it never came. Shifting her weight from one foot to the other, she crossed her arms over her chest. "Well, what are you waiting for?" she said. "Dinner first, and then you've got to pay the bills." Her voice had a high, reedy tone that made him shiver, but he was relieved she hadn't noticed or said anything about the pillow. He could just imagine how she would rip into him if she knew all he'd gotten for his laptop was a pillow. Yeah, he thought, suppressing a shiver of anticipation, but what a pillow! Already he couldn't wait for dinner to be over, the bills to be paid, and night to come so he could go to bed as early as he could without making Alice suspicious. But dinner and cleaning up afterward took longer than usual because, for some reason, Alice decided to be chatty at supper tonight, telling him in excruciating detail about everything that had happened to her today at the Dunkin' Donuts, where she worked. Before he got set to pay the bills, Martin went down to the cellar and spent more than an hour hooking up his old computer, and then another half hour making sure it still worked. Other than a ridiculously long startup wait, he thought it would be all right. When he came upstairs and sat down at the dining room table to pay the bills, he noticed he had inadvertently scooped up the rejection letter he'd gotten from Cemetery Dance with the stack of bills. This was his 8th rejection since January. Deep, aching sadness filled him as he unfolded the letter and read it over a few more times, trying to shake his disappointment. But try as he might to shake the disappointment, all it did was sink in deeper, filling him with a sense of abject failure. Maybe Alice is right. Maybe I should just give it up. But a tiny voice in the back of his mind told him not to quit. Not yet. The editor had included an encouraging handwritten note. That had never happened before. More importantly, Martin wanted to sleep a night or two on Lovecraft's pillow to see what inspiration might come. If nothing happened, if in the end it was just an old musty pillow, then and only then would he accept that he was delusional about ever beating the odds and getting published. He would do what Alice wanted and quit trying to be a writer. "Make sure you—" Alice shouted, but when she turned the corner and saw Martin still sitting at the dining room table, she lowered her voice. "Turn out the lights." From behind the stack of bills, Martin looked up at her, surprised to see that she had already washed up and changed into her nightgown. "You're going to bed?" "I'm exhausted," Alice said with a scowl that all but said, "You just don't get it, do you? I pulled another double shift today." She frowned. "I thought you'd be done with that by now."
The dishes took a little longer than I thought they would, and I, let me guess, was downstairs, writing. Martin cowered, wishing she would stop trying to second-guess him all the time.
"I was just hooking up the old computer to see if it still works," he said.
"Well, does it?"
Alice sounded as if she really couldn't care one way or the other. Martin shrugged. "I'll make do," he said in a soft voice as he opened the checkbook. He couldn't help but shake his head with despair when he saw the balance in their account. There was no way he'd be able to pay everything this week, or next. He listened to the tread of Alice's feet on the stairs as she went upstairs, noticing that she turned out the hall light on her way. It didn't matter. He wouldn't be going upstairs until he had the bills paid. If he wasn't so excited about finding out what dreams and inspiration he might get sleeping on Lovecraft's pillow, he might have planned to stay up late,
watching Letterman and the Late Late Show simply to avoid slipping into bed next to her. But tonight, what dreams may come, he muttered. He paid as many bills as he could and left enough money in the account for groceries this week. Once he was done, he licked and sealed the envelopes, put stamps on them, and went upstairs. As soon as he walked into the bedroom and saw what had happened, Martin felt a shock of utter disappointment. Then a spike of anger filled him as he approached the bed and saw that Alice really had swapped pillows with him. She had his pillow, Lovecraft's pillow, and was already sound asleep, lying on her left side with her back to him. Her arm was tucked underneath the pillow so it cradled her head. Her long, dark hair spilled out across the bed sheets like a splash of ink. "For crying out," Martin whispered, but he cut himself off when Alice stirred in her sleep. When she rolled over onto her back, her breathing sounded deep and watery, and she moaned softly. Martin stood in the darkened doorway for a long time, staring at her and wondering how he was going to get the pillow away from her. Holding his breath, he leaned over the bed, trying to find some way to take his pillow back without disturbing her. Alice's ragged breathing deepened, the only sound in the room, but Martin was listening to the pulsing rush of blood in his head. What was he going to do? He didn't dare face the firestorm that would erupt if he awakened her while trying to get his pillow back. Her pillow, the one with the white pillowcase, had dropped onto the floor beside the bed. Finally, accepting that he had to give it up, he heaved a heavy sigh, picked up Alice's pillow, and placed it on his side of the bed. Then he walked into the bathroom, washed his face, and brushed his teeth. When he turned off the lights, a pale blue cast of moonlight flooded the bedroom. With one last disappointed look at Lovecraft's pillow, he settled down into bed. But the instant his weight hit the mattress, Alice stirred. She snorted and groaned deep in her chest.
"Beyond the wall, Igolanak sleeps."
In the moonlit darkness, her voice sounded much deeper than normal, and there was a weird distortion to it that sent chills through Martin. He rolled over in bed and looked at his wife, leaning over with his face so close he could feel the warmth of her breath. Still sound asleep, Alice smacked her lips and then started tossing her head from side to side.
"The tattered eyeless ones serve him."
Her voice modulated up and down with an odd reverberation.
"Crawling on his body, awaiting the time he can return. Waiting, waiting."
Her thrashing grew more intense. As she continued to mutter incomprehensible words and phrases, Martin kept moving closer and closer, waiting for an opportunity when she rolled her head to the side to snatch the pillow out from under her. Alice's voice dropped to a raw whisper now. She muttered things that made absolutely no sense to Martin, but which chilled him nonetheless. Her moaning grew louder as she tossed her head furiously from side to side. The pillow under her head began to make strange sucking sounds. Just as Martin was steeling himself to grab it, Alice's eyes shot open, and, with a sharp intake of breath, she sat bolt upright in bed. As Martin cringed away from her, she let out the most blood-curdling scream he had ever heard. Several hours later, Martin was pacing back and forth in the hospital hallway when the psych resident who was on duty that night walked up to him. The name tag on his pale green surgical shirt read, "Dr. Brown." He was a tall man with thinning dark hair and glasses so thick they distorted his eyes, making him look like he was in a state of perpetual surprise. Martin had stopped pacing outside the door to the locked room where Alice was being kept. Before Dr. Brown could say a word, Alice, her arms bound in a straitjacket, lurched into sight and slammed herself against the wire mesh window so hard the door rattled. The sound echoed like a cannon shot in the long hallway. Alice glared at them through disheveled strands of her long dark hair. Her eyes were open so wide the bloodshot whites showed all around her dark pupils. Her lips were flecked with strands of thick yellow mucus. Dr. Brown looked at Martin sympathetically and placed one hand on his shoulder. Without a nod of the head, he directed Martin away from the window. The thick glass muffled Alice's enraged screams as she watched them go, her eyes blazing with fury. "I'm sorry you have to see this," Dr. Brown said. He was holding a clipboard with a medical chart, and he glanced down at it. "Do you have any idea what's wrong with her?" Martin's voice caught in his throat, and he had to clench his hands into fists to stop them from shaking. "At this point," Dr. Brown said, "all we know for sure is that she's had a complete mental breakdown." "There were no warning signs?" Martin considered for a moment, and then shook his head. "No history of mental illness in the family?" "None that I'm aware of," Martin said, and had to stop himself from adding, "unless being a total bitch 24/7 is a sign of mental illness." "Was she on any medications?"
"Just one, for high blood pressure."
"No other prescription drugs?" Martin shook his head. "Do you know if she's taking any illicit drugs?"
"No, of course not," Martin said, biting his lower lip and shaking his head.
Clearly baffled, Dr. Brown looked up at the ceiling for a moment or two before saying, "Well, we'll have to keep her here so we can conduct a complete battery of tests. For now, though, it's challenge enough just keeping her sedated." Even though they had rounded the corner at the end of the hall, Martin could still feel Alice's insane stare drilling into his back. He cringed inwardly, knowing, or at least suspecting, that he knew exactly what had caused his wife's instantaneous breakdown. And the saddest thing about it, the thing that might prove he himself was mentally ill, was that Martin accepted it all as grist for the mill. He had what he wanted. Inspiration for a story. One hell of a story. "I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Hale," Dr. Brown said. "I wish I could be more hopeful." The bells above the pawn shop door jingled when Martin swung the door open and entered. Just like before, the store owner was resting against the counter on both elbows while he flipped through a girly magazine. If he hadn't been wearing a different shirt from the previous day, Martin might have suspected he had slipped back in time, and it really was the same day. "There's another cool idea for a story," he thought as he walked up to the counter and held out the blue and white striped pillow. "I want to trade this back for my laptop," he said in as firm a voice as he could muster. "Now." The store owner regarded him without blinking his eyes for a second or two. Then he shifted the toothpick from one corner of his mouth to the other and said, "Gonna cost you an extra $50. Martin heaved a sigh as he fished his wallet from his back pocket and opened it. After buying lunch at the hospital this morning, all he had left were 2 20s, which he held up to the man. "Will 40 do?" he asked, trying to keep the pleading note out of his voice. "It's all I got until I sell a story." The store owner scowled at him as if he didn't like the deal, but Martin was sure he'd be more than happy to make $40 for doing nothing. "Like you said," Martin shrugged, "you don't have much demand for laptops." "Or old pillows, neither," the store owner said with a sneer. But that didn't stop him from taking the $40 and Lovecraft's pillow from Martin. He moved over to the window display, grabbed Martin's laptop and case, and then put the pillow right back where Martin had first seen it. He still had the small, hand-lettered sign that read, "Lovecraft's Pillow, $250, which he propped up in front of the pillow. Satisfied, he handed Martin his laptop without another word. Martin left the pawn shop, but as the bells jingled and the door swung shut behind him, he hesitated on the sidewalk as he stared back at the pillow and the window display. The store owner was still standing in the doorway, and for a moment their eyes met and locked. "I should tell him what that pillow does to people," Martin thought as a shiver raced up his back. He made a move toward the door, but before he opened it, he sighed and, shaking his head, turned and left. Maybe what happened didn't have anything to do with Lovecraft's pillow, he told himself as he started up the street toward home. Maybe Alice had been on the road to a mental breakdown for a long time now. Maybe the money pressures and the deteriorating relationship had finally gotten the better of her and she finally snapped. Maybe she would have had a breakdown whether or not she had taken his pillow and slept on it last night. Maybe the whole thing was all in his imagination. But now, more than ever, Martin was confident that he had what a writer really needs to succeed. He'd always had imagination, but now he had inspiration. And with or without Alice in his life, he had a lot of perseverance. As soon as he got back to the house, he moved his office up from the basement and into the living room. It took the rest of the afternoon to get things set up just the way he wanted them with his writing desk and bookcases in front of the window. The view outside wasn't much, just a small, weed-choked front lawn that faced another modest home just like his across the street. But there was sunlight and fresh air drifting in through the open windows, and he had his laptop back. He had no doubt now that he had all the inspiration he needed to write a story that the editors at Cemetery Dance would accept. And the title? Hell, that was the easiest part.